Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, August 31st, 2014, and this is show number 486. Steve and I had a blast this week. We went on a great trip to Kings Canyon and Sequoia National Parks with the professors, Marianne of Induced Memory fame and her partner Devin. We were really out in the wooded mountains, which meant that for 5 days we had no cell service at all and virtually no internet service. I say virtually because the rustic hotel right on the South Fork River in Cedar Grove where we were staying had sort of fake internet. Around 6 to 7 a.m., the porthole to the real world would open up just long enough to squeak in a few text messages, maybe an email or two, and then just close right up. One of the women working there tried to convince me that it was because someone was hogging all the bandwidth doing videos. But I mean, seriously, we couldn't get a text message out, so I don't think anybody was downloading videos. Anyway, we decided we'd suffer along with this and go for hikes in the meadows with giant cliff mountains surrounding us, listen to the birds chattering our way, and sit with our feet in a cold stream at the end of the day. It was horrible. It's just awful. Luckily, I'd done some work ahead of time, and with some help from some of my friends, we still have a great show for you. I mentioned last week that I upset the universe by buying a Windows phone. You may be wondering whether I had some sort of psychotic episode that caused this, but I really did have some good logic on why I went ahead and did this. I had learned from Chris Ashley on the SMR podcast that Nokia, also known as Microsoft, was selling the Nokia 635 for only $100 off contract. He said it was a decent phone, and I figured for that price, I could use it as an iPod Touch and learn about the device and the operating system with a very low commitment. It would have been even more fun if I'd taken my SIM card out of my iPhone and really committed to the phone, but they take different size SIMs. I want to mention that Joel Rushworth, one of the minions, what Chris Ashley calls his minions, has been super helpful to me, telling me all kinds of cool stuff. And just this afternoon, he told me that I could have gotten a nano SIM to micro SIM adapter. I might still do that, see if I can make it till the iPhone 6 comes out by using a Windows phone. As I said last week, I do not hate this phone. If I were looking for my first phone and I didn't have an investment in one of the other platforms, I would definitely put the Nokia 635 in the running. The build quality of the device appears to be quite good, and it even survived a 2 to 3 foot fall to concrete without a scratch. The screen is a bit bigger than the iPhone, and it's bright and crisp. I know it's not supposed to be a high-end phone, but it feels at least as good as an iPhone in my hand. I was very pleased that I had no trouble figuring out how to do the basic things in Windows 8 Phone 8.1. I very easily figured out how to connect it to my network, how to add my email accounts. A little harder to figure out how to rename them. They called them Gmail and Gmail One, but I did figure that out eventually. I searched everywhere for how to add contacts, not realizing that adding the email accounts already did that for me automatically. That was pretty cool. By experimentation, I figured out how to unpin stupid AT&T crapware from the home screen and how to pin stuff I did want to the home screen. Here's a distinction from Android. You can permanently delete the crapware on Windows Phone, which you can't do on Android. I easily figured out how to move and resize the tiles. It was very intuitive. The tiles can be small squares, small rectangles, or big squares. This makes it really easy to get access to the stuff you care about quickly. Now, since I didn't have a cellular plan with this phone, I couldn't make phone calls. But is that really in the list of things we care about anymore? I connected my Windows account to Skype, and I was able to easily make phone calls over Skype the one time I wanted to try it out. I think one of my favorite things about Windows Phone 8.1 is that the built-in keyboard shows you capital letters when you hit the caps key, and lowercase letters when you don't have the caps key hit. Now, how hard would it be for Apple to give us that, for crying out loud? Marianne from New Zealand is often ranting about this, and I have to agree. I imagine the first keyboards we see in iOS 8 will simply have this feature and nothing else. What would you pay? Windows Phone has built-in autocomplete, but does it completely differently from iOS. When you start typing a word, it shows you possible matches to what it thinks you're about to type. Tap the word that you like, and it's auto-completed. This does require you to stop typing and look up above the keyboard, so for those who are really good at typing on tiny little keyboards, this wouldn't be a huge feature, but I figure there's only three of you out there anyway, so it is a big feature. I noticed one time it even correctly predicted the words I was going to type, simply from the context of the words I'd already typed. I wrote, "Does this make?" and Windows Phone offered the word, "Sense," correctly completing my thought. I thought it was very cool. I have been messing around with iOS 8 in the last couple of days, and they sort of do the same kind of thing, but I think it's actually working a lot better in Windows Phone. So I hope it gets better in iOS 8 than it is right now. It very often didn't know what word I was trying to type, maybe 95% of the way typing through the word, while Windows Phone seems to predict it almost every time. Some of the native apps on Windows Phone have trouble displaying the titles, cutting them off to the right. In some cases, they use this technique to show you that there's more information to the right, but it happens incorrectly in the native email application so that sometimes you can't read the name of the person from whom the email has come. This happens because the font is too big, and I didn't see an obvious way to fix it. I hadn't turned on giant text or anything like that, so I'm not sure why the default would be dumb like that so that you can't actually read the name of the person from whom the email has come. Two-fingered pinch to zoom in and out works really well on Windows Phone, especially in email. I set up three different email accounts on the phone, and it created three separate tiles for the three accounts, which I really don't like. It's not a unified inbox. I go into Mail, and I read all of them together normally, and I would have preferred one app with all three accounts. Maybe I'm weird that way. Perhaps most people like to have their accounts separated. It's not a huge deal, but it's not the way I would have chosen to have it. I mentioned earlier that Windows Phone uses the technique of having words go off screen to indicate more information. One of the places this works well is in Mail. At the top, you can see All, Unread, and Urgent, inviting you to scroll to the right to change the mode. I really like this method of changing what I'm reading. The only problem is that the unread mode isn't just unread email. I never figured out what it was, but it seemed to be showing me something different than All, but not unread, because it seems to me after I've read everything, shouldn't it be empty? I don't know. Not quite sure what it was doing there. I didn't test any other third-party mail apps, so maybe there's better ones out there. This was just what was built into the phone. I love how Windows Phone puts my day's appointments on the lock screen. Like today, it said, NoSillaCast Live at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. I would like it even better, though, if it wasn't fishing through my Facebook contacts to get their birthdays and plopping those on my home screen. In fact, it gives me an alert about it. See, my problem is that with Facebook, I say yes to everybody who wants to be my friend. So seeing everyone's birthday is a mess for me. This isn't just my real-life friends. These are all my virtual friends. People, maybe I've never even talked to them before, but they are, I don't know, they like the show or something, and they want to be pals. They want to see the garbage that I put up on Facebook, which is really inane. But I'm getting everybody's birthday. I mean, I love you all. Really, I love you, but don't want to know when it's your birthday. I think Microsoft should give you an option to see Facebook info or not. I was a bit annoyed that it decided this for me. Actually, now that I think about it, maybe Facebook did that on its own. I did search through the settings and I found notifications, and I was able to turn off Facebook in its entirety, which is better than nothing, but just shutting off the dumb birthdays would have been nicer. I do like how it actually notifies me of Skype conversations and WhatsApp conversations. For some reason, I cannot get iOS to reliably give me notifications on those two apps. I've done everything I can to get them to say, no, I really want to know. If somebody talks in WhatsApp to me, I want to know. If somebody talks in Skype, I want to know. But no, it won't do it. Now, as much as I like being able to change the tile sizes and move them around easily on Windows Phone, I really don't like the tiles at all. You get two kinds of tiles, those that are a single color so that you can't distinguish them from each other unless you read the name of the tile, and heck, sometimes it doesn't even tell you the name of the tile, and the others are those that have random images bouncing around of them. There's a people tile that's your Facebook friends with tiny randomly chosen profile photos rotating in and out. Super distracting and annoying, but at least it's not bland blue or orange or whatever color scheme you've chosen. It's ugly and bland on one hand and distracting on the other. I hate it. I should mention, you don't get to choose that one tile is like a bland blue and one's a bland orange. They're either all blue or all orange. I really do hate it. The Nokia 635 came with its own micro USB charger, but I didn't bother with that at first. I just used an iPad 10-watt charger I had plugged in. It's 5 watts and 2 amps. Surprisingly, the Nokia 635 announced that if I insisted on using this inferior charger, it would charge very slowly, and I really should consider using the real one. I looked at the real one. It was 5 watts, 750 milliamps, so 3/4 of a milliamp instead of 2 amps. I do not understand why a 10-watt charger isn't considered good enough for this little phone, but since I was leaving it charging all night, I didn't worry about it. I suspect that Nokia must be looking to sell more accessories. That's the only reason it would have said that. I am not a fan of proprietary charging, so I do hope this is just a fake message like I think it is. It's common knowledge that Microsoft is caught in a chicken-and-the-egg situation with their App Store. Adoption of Windows Phone is hampered by a lack of apps, but app developers are not flocking to write apps because there's no users to buy them. I went into this experiment with an open mind and assumed that a lot of the big players would be absent. What I found was a little more disturbing. Let me walk through this by example. I went to the App Store to look for Google+. Now, this may have been a mean test to start with, because Google writing for Microsoft, I don't know whether that would happen, but it did show me something interesting. I had my choice of many different Google Plus apps. I chose one that had hundreds of reviews with an average of 4+ stars. It was intuitive how to install the app, and I was not challenged at any point with my Microsoft password, which was kind of a relief with a free app, I gotta tell you. But this app was horrible. It had pop-up ads all over the place, and it was virtually unusable as a result. I went back to the store to verify that it had high ratings, and I looked at the reviews. They were pretty much fewer than 5 words each. They said things like, works great, like it, fine app. Makes me think that the rating system is either fake or, I don't know, people are overcompensating and they're saying, well, all this stuff is junk. We better, like the stuff that isn't just horrible junk might be a little better. I don't know. I went looking for a podcast app and I found one, again, highly rated by hundreds of people, called Casts. I downloaded it, searched for my own show, and I was able to subscribe. So far, so good. At some point, though, I tapped something that made my podcast alone be pinned to my start page on Windows Phone. So I didn't pin the app to my homepage, I pinned my podcast to the homepage. And I'm not really sure how that happened. Well, no worries. I hit play and I tested and it worked out. There was only one problem. There was no stop button. I'm not joking. I could not figure out how to make the darn thing stop. There was no pause, no stop. Play was the only, it was playing and that was it. I finally shut the phone down to get it to stop. I learned later from Joel how to actually kill an app, and I could have done that, but at the time I didn't know how to kill an app. I looked at the app again later, and the play button successfully turned into a pause button the second time. So maybe that's an aberration. But there's more. Now that I have subscribed to the NoSillaCast, I cannot, for the life of me, figure out how to subscribe to a second podcast. The only option I can find that's under the ellipsis symbol is the option to share my choice of podcast with someone else via email. That's a good thing I picked my own show, because all I can do is share it with you. So again, I asked the question, how can an app that performs this poorly get 4.5 stars with 298 reviews? Well, only if these reviews are completely fake, or possibly again, because the bar is set so low for apps in the App Store. Now, I do have to say that Joel downloaded the same app called Cast and was able to subscribe to multiple podcasts. But I've showed this to Steve, and he can't figure out how to add a second podcast either. So, I don't know. Maybe I somehow made a mutant version of the app that is only my podcast. I don't know how to get to the real app though, because it's the only thing I have. Well, next I thought I'd look for LastPass. I stopped dead in my tracks. If people can make apps that claim to be Google Plus but aren't Google Plus, then how do I know that LastPass is really by LastPass? It said that LastPass was the developer, but my one bad experience made me terrified to enter my most precious last password into an app from the Microsoft Store. I mentioned on a previous show that Chris Ashley has this group of buddies. I talked about this a minute ago, about his affectionately referred to minions. Again, one of the most helpful minions is Joel Rushworth. And he sent me a message telling me an interesting, if very arcane, way to get the real LastPass. He sent me a link to WPCentral.com where they had reviewed a few apps, one of which was LastPass. On that page, they have QR codes, so you can scan them in via your phone to install them. Well, that sounds really cool when you say it that way, but if you think about it, it's really convoluted. Here you are with a mobile device, but you have to use a real computer to bring up the web page because you can't scan a barcode with a phone using the phone's own browser, right? That's not going to work. Not only that, but scanning is accomplished via the Bing Vision utility, which is available inside the camera app, but you have to choose the lenses option to get to it. Like I said, it's pretty cool that you can install apps by pointing your phone at your computer screen, but I'm holding a mobile phone in my hand right now. Why would I need a computer to do all that? Again, I do appreciate Joel helping with me with this, and I don't mean to mock it, but I can't help but think about Scott Stratton's book, QR Codes Kill Kittens, where he does mock this exact and precise use of QR codes. I'm not going to do an exhaustive review of the camera, but I'd say It's a mid-range camera. Nothing to write home about, but it gets the job done, at least outdoors. You can install the Nokia camera software, which is really cool. It lets you modify the white balance, aperture, shutter speed, ISO, and more before taking the picture, just like the big boy Nokia 1020. I don't have high expectations for a $100 phone, and you'll be really, really happy. I also didn't get a lot of time to play with Cortana yet, so I don't want to go on too much about it just yet. Cortana is the equivalent of Siri. Maybe if I get more time later, I can give it more of a ring out. I did find a setting in networks to turn off Wi-Fi until I'm near my favorite networks. How cool of an awesome battery saver is that? I thought that was really cool. I know I'm jumping around a little bit here, but there's just these little things that I've been playing with that are really useful. Kevin Berry challenged me to talk about the blind accessibility features in Windows Phone, specifically because he was under the impression that Windows Phone 8.1 is completely inaccessible to the blind. Now, luckily, he's wrong about the word completely. When I went into Settings and under Ease of Access, I found something called Narrator. I turned it on, and just like with VoiceOver, the phone read out loud to me everything I touched. It told me what was a button and what I could do with it, like double tap to open. I was able to navigate back to the home screen and then double tap on Mail. I was able to open mails. I was able to read them. From the list of emails, before you actually open them, it read them out loud in their entirety. If I opened them, sliding my finger on screen would read them line by line. So it actually worked a little bit better when I didn't have them open, which is kind of counterintuitive. Now, scrolling is supposed to work with two fingers, but it was unreliable. Sometimes it would work great, I could scroll with two fingers, and sometimes it would do nothing at all. That's an important feature to have work consistently. As usual, I am not an expert on accessibility, but within my small skill set in testing VoiceOver, it seemed that Narrator has at least some of the basic features required to operate it without sight. I didn't find anything like the rotor that's used to enhance navigation, but as far as reading things out loud, I didn't find too much that didn't work. Biggest thing was the fact that scrolling was limited. I think they've made a good amount of progress because from my blind friends, it didn't work at all before. There was nothing at all. So I think they're on the right path. Certainly not as far along as Apple, but they're definitely working in the right direction, I think. All right. It's time for my first 2 weeks bottom line assessment. I'm going to go beyond I don't hate this phone and say, I like this phone. I really do. Beyond the physical phone itself, the OS is intuitive, it's responsive, even on this very inexpensive phone, and I find certain things delightful, like how consistently it gives me my notifications. I dislike the App Store intensely, but from talking to Joel, I have learned that Microsoft is really attacking the problem of bad apps and cleaning out the worst offenders. Someone sent me a link, and now I'm forgetting who it was. I apologize. Someone sent me a link to an article about how Microsoft just removed 1,500 apps that were misleading, I think they called them. So, would I buy this phone? No, but you knew that going in. Well, actually, technically, the answer must be yes, because I did buy this phone. But would I buy this phone as a normal person? You know I'm a card-carrying Apple fan who didn't even give up an Apple when they were weeks from bankruptcy. Would I recommend this phone to someone getting their first phone, or maybe on a tough budget? I definitely would. For a phone that requires no contract so you can pay as you go, I think it's fabulous. Maybe you get it for a kid for their first phone, and you don't even give them a SIM card. In the time since I bought the phone, it has dropped to $92 on Amazon if you pay attention. You do get to choose whether to buy it with AT&T's crapware on it or T-Mobile's crapware, which is nice too. But for some reason, the T-Mobile one is going for $129. I think if you go to their individual websites, it's more expensive. If you go through Amazon, it's cheaper. And of course, there's a link in the show notes if you want to buy one. If you go to Microsoft, it was $100 for a while. Now it's $130. Anyway, pay attention and look for the lowest price. I think, and don't take my word at this, but I'm pretty sure AT&T and T-Mobile are interchangeable, so I think you could get the $92 one, AT&T one on Amazon, and use it on T-Mobile. But absolutely check first on that before listening to me. I gotta tell you, I'm as surprised as you are that I really like the Nokia Lumia 635 running Windows Phone 8.1. And you can quote me on that.
Hello, Allison. This is Charles Goucher from the Silicon Valley Mac User Group. I heard your recent review on episode number 485 of the Jabra Sport Plus Bluetooth earbuds, and since I recently bought my second pair of them, I thought I'd give you my own findings. I went looking for a pair with a few specific desires. I wanted to listen to podcasts and audiobooks with very little music use, So sound quality doesn't have to be high. I want something where I can hear the outside world rather than isolating it out, so in-ear buds really don't work well. And finally, I want something that I can keep on my ears for most of the day. The Jabra Sport Plus fits the bill on all counts. Sound quality is reasonable. It's not great, mainly because the buds sit close to your ears but don't actually sit in-ear. Even so, I find the bass projection on the Jabras to be far better than the Jaybird Blue Buds. Pretty much a match for your own findings. Phone calls are very good, and the microphone is clear enough that you can be understood while talking on it, but not clear enough that Siri will understand what you're saying very well. Connectivity seems fair to me. If I keep my iPhone in my pocket, especially my left pocket, then I tend to get a lot of audio dropouts. But this makes sense since the Bluetooth signal is trying to bounce off of nearby objects or go through my body to get between the earbuds and the phone. If I keep the iPhone in a belt clip on my right side, though, then the signal seems to do fine. In comparison, if I put the phone on a desk, I can walk around in the room or even in the next room with a perfect signal. Moving around in an area with a lot of Bluetooth signals, however, can make the audio glitch. It's fine if I'm outdoors or if I'm sitting at my desk inside, but if I go outside while listening to my phone from inside to the outside or vice versa, then I usually lose the signal for a few seconds, even though the phone is with me the whole time. For most people with a Bluetooth mouse and keyboard linked to their Mac, this won't be a problem. But folks using Bluetooth speakers around the house may run into some glitches. I've also noticed that if left idle for a few hours, the buds seem to get out of sync with the phone and will automatically disconnect and reconnect before they'll play again. No extra effort needed on my part, but it's an annoyance. Oh, and do make sure that you apply the firmware update that Jabra has available on their website. One of the greatest features of these earbuds is the fact that you can link to two different devices at the same time. As far as I can tell, the Jabra is the only stereo earbuds that offers this feature. I can keep a link to my iPhone and my MacBook Pro and listen to them interchangeably. The one drawback I found with this is that if both devices are giving a sound, the latest device to make a sound takes priority. So, if I'm listening to a podcast from the Mac and my phone beeps with a text message, then the podcast goes away, I hear the beep from the phone, and then the podcast returns. I've lost about 10 seconds worth of audio, and I have to rewind the podcast to get those 10 seconds back. A flurry of text messages, and my listening experience comes to a complete halt. Battery life holds up well. I can keep playback going for 3 to 4 hours on a single charge, and if I'm not listening very much, the earbuds on idle will last the whole day. Recharging takes about an hour with a standard micro USB cord. As for long-term reliability, I put over a year of constant use on my original set of earbuds with no troubles at all, and then left them behind in the seat pocket of an airplane flight. Oops. An unexpected bonus is that the Jabras seem to be virtually invisible when I'm wearing them. Nobody seems to notice when I have them on, until I reach for the pause button so I can hear what they're saying. Compare that with your typical Apple earbuds, which are so amazingly white that it's hard to miss them when you're wearing them. So, there are certainly other earbuds and headphones out there that can put out better sound than these things, particularly on the bass end. But if you're seriously wanting to get rid of the wires between your iPhone and your ears, I don't think there's any better option on the market today than the Jabra Sport Plus. Take care, Allison, and I'll be listening on my Jabras, of course.
Well, thanks, Charles. It's nice to have our conclusions verified. I wondered if I or we were nuts because we weren't in love with the Jaybirds like everyone else. I'd like to mess with everything right now, though, and talk about a third set of Bluetooth headphones. We've talked about the $130 Jaybird Blue Buds and then the Jabra Sports Plus $60 headphones. But what if even that price is too steep for you? This week, I've been testing the Avantri Jogger Sports Bluetooth headphones that will run you a mere $38 on Amazon. To review my requirements, I want something for running and working out at the gym that will stay put on my head and have acceptable audio for, spoken voice podcast listening. They have to be comfortable and not too fiddly. The Avantri headphones do not have any flangey kind of things at all to fit into your ear like the Jaybirds or Jabras. Instead, they have a stiff but flexible cable between the two sides that goes around your ears and then behind your head. The headphones themselves go just inside your ear and have this large disc that kind of covers most of your ear. Looks like an ear cup, but it actually just sort of sits out in space above the earbud that goes into your ear. No fiddly bits at all, and the part that goes around your ear doesn't even actually need to grab hold of your ear to stay in place. The wire is stiff enough that they just sort of compress a bit on your head and stay there. Of the three headphones I've tested, they stay snugly in place better than all of them. The audio is better, way better, than my experience with the probably defective Jaybirds, but this does make the speaker sound as though they're kind of in a box. Not echoey exactly, just kind of muted. Definitely acceptable for my spoken voice podcast, but an audiophile would pretty much go screaming running away from the Avantri headphones. One other annoying downside to the Avantris is that they have a proprietary USB charging cable. It's regular USB on one end, but a pin connector on the other end that goes into a tiny, tiny little hole in the headphones. If I lose that charging cable, that's pretty much $38 down the toilet. Included in the box with the headphones is a diagram demonstrating where to put your phone to avoid dropouts. They show the controlling headphone is on the right side, so they tell you you must put your phone in your right pocket or in an armband on your right side. Now, actually, the Jabras said the same thing, and I think Charles did a great job of explaining that Bluetooth has problems going through your water-based body. Unfortunately, pretty much anywhere I put my phone other than carrying it in my hand, I have awful dropouts. It mirrored my experience with the Jabras. I do not know why Steve has little to no problem with dropouts, but I do. I guess my message to you is that your mileage may vary. Perhaps the Bluetooth is just weaker on my phone. Perhaps my new iPhone 6 will have better luck. I tested the Avantris using my iPad at the gym, and they worked brilliantly. I'm always fighting the cord between my iPad and my head as I bounce around on the elliptical cross trainer, so having Bluetooth headphones for this application will be fantastic. And of course, it's not going through my body, so I had no cutouts at all. I have to say the biggest plus of the Avantri is that they were the most comfortable of the three headphones I tested. They're so light that they don't pull on you at all, and not having anything actually grabbing my ear was such a relief. No problem with my large sunglasses either. They do include three little sets of spongy covers for the part that goes into your ear, but even without them, it wasn't too bad. After an hour walking with them, they did get on my nerves, so I added the spongy things, and it really, really helped. I don't think there are headphones on the planet that won't bother me after an hour, so I'd call the Avantris a success in the comfort category. They also win as the least fiddly in terms of getting them into or onto your ears. You pull them apart, wrap around your head, and let go, and they pretty much go right into the correct spot on your ears. Now, I don't find the controls for volume and start and stop and that sort of thing, their multifunction button, it's not perfect. For example, just tapping up on the volume goes to the next track. It doesn't increase the volume. So you have to find it and kind of hold it to get the volume up. So I'm pretty much using start, stop on it, and that's all. If you're looking for some Bluetooth headphones that will get the job done with acceptable audio quality for the price of a week's worth of lattes, I can recommend the Avantri Jogger Sports Bluetooth headphones for your podcast listening needs. All right, I'm going to have to go back and modify my blog post on this because while I was sitting here showing the live show, the Avantri headphones, remember how I said that the up-down volume thing seemed to go to next instead of going to volume? Turns out the volume controls are on the left, not the up-down buttons on the right. So I'm going to go back and edit that and make sure it's okay. So anyway, it looks like up-down volume probably works just fine. You know what I love? When normal people in normal conversations talk about Clarify with me. Now, I guess I'm stretching it calling Dr. Gary, our memory expert, a normal person, but work with me here. We're traveling down the highway and she asks me how to do something on the Mac or iOS, but she stops me just as soon as I start telling her the answer. She says, oh, just make a Clarify document for me, will you? It was awesome. I think for a lot of people, or at least the circles I run within, immediately think of Clarify when they want to know how to do something. Whether you use it to help your family, help your friends, help your coworkers, wow your boss, who probably needs a lot of help, or heck, even to help you remember how to do things just for yourself, Clarify is awesome. There really is nothing else in the market that competes with Clarify for making a series of screenshots with text and annotations to clarify instructions for you. Check it out at clarify-it.com. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond, and Bart Bouchatz is back with us today. How are things in Ireland today, Bart?
I believe the phrase is wet and windy. Our weather forecaster is promising something I've never heard of before. Tropical weather for next week.
Ooh, so hot, wet, and windy?
I think that's what tropical means.
Ew.
I'm awaiting developments. So far, it's just wet and windy, but we shall see.
Well, I couldn't be happier. We went to Sequoia and Kings Canyon this weekend, and the weather forecast said it was going to be 95 degrees, 97 degrees, and then 100 degrees when we were there. It turned out to be like in the 70s in Kings Canyon, and maybe smidge into the low 80s in Sequoia. So, woohoo!
And is that just because you were at an altitude?
I guess, but I mean, you would have thought Sequoia.
Well, right. You know, they don't assume people live underground, so they should really give temperatures for at ground level.
You would think. But it is kind of hilly there, so that must have helped us. But it shouldn't have helped us that much. But anyway, enough with week in weather.
Well, hopefully you got some nice pickies I can look forward to on Flickr.
I might have a couple. I haven't had a chance. Good. We were actually without internets for the entire week. And no cell service. Huh. So
those electromagnetic waves don't go around those corners and down into those canyons?
Apparently not. And GPS was a little dodgy, too. So other than that, it was an electronics-free week, which was kind of fun, actually.
I was wondering why you were so quiet.
Yeah, really. And, you know, had I known, I would have said goodbye.
Fair point.
All right, let's see. You wanted to give a slight correction from last week, right?
Yeah, well, correction is maybe too strong a word, but we were sort of, you know, messing around. It may have been a pre-show. It may have been during, you know, it was a throwaway comment about the difference in speed between spinning hard disks and solid-state hard disks. And it was in relation to a question asked in the community where... the G Plus community, where someone was having this, like, horrible... They took out their SSD, and then their Mac was taking, like, literally 30 seconds until the Apple logo came up. And we sort of joked, well, look at how slow spinning hard disks are.
I think it was Bob Kriya, by the way.
Yes, that was it. There was slightly more to it than that. Yes, they're slow, but they're not that slow. And the reason was because by removing the drive, Bob hadn't told OS X that it should now boot from the other disk. And so OS X was starting up, looking for the disk it was told to look for, waiting 30 seconds to see if anything happened, figuring out nothing did happen, and then saying, oh, well, I guess I'll use the other one.
You know, I never changed that when I swapped out. I took a Mac that I'd put an SSD in, and then I turned around and gave it to Kyle, and I put the old spinning hard drive in. I never told it. Oh, but the spinning drive had the OS.
Yeah, so it didn't change.
Where was his OS?
Right, it all depends on whether the drive you're booting from is in the same physical port on the motherboard.
Oh, and since I put it right in the back, in the same place, it was okay?
I would assume so, or else, yeah, because basically the motherboard is going to, the BIOS is going to say boot up from hard disk number 0 or hard disk number 1. And if there's nothing at 0, because let's say he had it so that he was booting off 1, which is not the default, but he may have put it that way. And then he plugs out the extra drive and puts the MacBook back the way it was. He's now trying to boot off 1, which maybe has become a CD drive again.
Okay.
It's going to spin up. Nothing's going to happen. It's going to say, guess I can't do that. And then it'll try 0 again.
Right. Okay.
So remember to tell OS X where it should boot from is the moral of the story. It helps.
Okay, good. So now Michael Price will be happy because he wanted to make sure we did give a little update on that there was a little more to that story than we originally thought.
Yes, and we shouldn't mock spinny hard drives that much.
A little bit.
They're awful. They're not that awful.
All right, let's kick into Security Light. What do we got this week?
Okay, so the only sort of update of note is an update to an update. I love when that happens. So I think when last we spoke, it was Patch Tuesday had just been, and Microsoft had released a bunch of patches, and most of them were fine. And one of them wasn't. One of them did a whole B-Sody thing. And so Microsoft pulled the update and waited 2 weeks to fix it. And then as of the 27th of August, which is just a few days ago, they released the update to the update.
They can't catch a break right now, can they?
Apparently not. The one thing I will say is, right, every time this happens, which happens once every couple of years, and, you know, this didn't kill every single computer. It only killed a few.
Sorry, that was my Windows phone. I was trying to shut it off so it wouldn't make noise, and I forgot I left
accessibility
turned on. She just... Oh, she's saying goodbye.
Did she just tell you 0% volume at high volume?
Yes. She's telling me to double tap to say goodbye.
Oh, right. Dear.
Sorry about that. Well, it proves that the accessibility does something.
Yeah, that's a step up for Windows.
Yep, there you go. Anyway, sorry about that.
No worries. No, I was just saying that every time Microsoft make a boo-boo on an update, people start to say, ooh, we shouldn't install updates. We should stay unpatched until we're sure the update is safe. It's like, yeah, but being unpatched is dangerous. Yeah, so, yeah, I would say don't be tempted by that illogic.
No,
keep
not at
patching
all.
Your Windows machines. The risk of your Windows update breaking your machine is smaller than the risk of malware breaking your machine.
Right, right.
Because as I say, this update was pulled, but it wasn't pulled because every single computer broke. It was pulled because a few people who had, I think it was certain types of fonts installed that caused the problem. It was a very one of those, you know, every Tuesday after the first full moon sort of bugs.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good. I thought it was a little worse than that.
Well, no, and for the people who had affected, it was a pain in the backside because, you know, there was a solution, but the first step was boot up using your recovery media. Uh-huh. Lots of people don't remember where that is.
Right, right.
So, anyway, it was annoying, but it is fixed.
Good.
In terms of security news, very little of it this week technically falls into security light. And this story is borderline at best, but I do want to mention it.
You're going to squint and call it security light?
I'm going to squint and call it security light. So I think it was back in 2011 we talked about a problem with something called WPS, which is, I think it's Wi-Fi protected setup or something like that. It's basically, you use a 4-digit PIN to connect stuff to your Wi-Fi. And there were all sorts of problems with it where devices were implementing it badly and basically, with 11,000 guesses, which is just not a lot, you could get onto anyone's Wi-Fi who had this feature badly implemented on the router. One of the fallouts from all of that was that Apple routers are safe because Apple only has WPS turned on if you go into the app, turn it on, and then it stays on for just a couple of minutes. So Apple routers were safe. And other than that, it was sort of potluck, and there was a giant big list of router models to check. Well, there was a paper presented at a security conference this week, and there is a new problem. And this one requires one guess.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yes, it is. There are certain router manufacturers whose sample code that vendors should use who use their chipsets uses a nonce, which is basically supposed to be a random number that you use to seed stuff. They just use the nonce of zero.
Oh, you're
in other
kidding.
Words, there is no randomness.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I wish I was. Now, the reason this is not really security light, unfortunately, is because there isn't a definitive list of which routers are and which routers aren't affected. So the only thing I can say is, if your router has WPS, make sure it's WPS that can be turned off, because that's where
right,
it should
right,
be.
Because that's right. Now I remember there were routers where it would say you could turn it off, only it wouldn't really turn it off. And then some, they would turn it off, but you had to know to turn it off.
Yeah. So this is basically just a reminder. If you didn't do anything about it that time because it took an hour to get onto your Wi-Fi, now it may take a millisecond.
Do we know that WPS is still turned off by default on the Apple routers?
Well, the way the Apple routers work is that it's never even... They have the feature, but it's never... The way they've said... They work the feature properly, right? The way the spec says it's supposed to work is you're supposed to push a physical button. It's supposed to stay active for like a minute, and then it's supposed to turn off again. But most routers don't do that.
Okay.
And Apple does things right. So you go into the control panel, and you say, I'm going to connect a device. It goes, here's your PIN. You connect the device, finished.
Okay.
So Apple have done it right, basically. And they have... I don't believe that has changed. It would be spectacular if they were to change that.
You know, remember back then, I remember looking for excuses for why I should tell my in-laws to get an Apple router. And everybody I talked to said get an Apple router, but then again, my sample set might be suspect in this case. And I had trouble getting, you know, specifics on why I should pick an Apple router for them. And it certainly seems like this kind of thing tells you a good reason to do it. But I've also been listening like on the SMR podcast, the guys were just kind of, you know, lackadaisically speaking, just blah, 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 talking about routers and this kind of thing, saying, oh, yeah, you know, I just buy a new one every year or two because, you know, they wear out, blah, 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 this kind of thing. And and I don't think that that should be so, that maybe you're buying cheap routers and you're getting what you pay for on that. I don't know.
Yes, I would agree. I would say buy a good router, use it for 5-10 years. I mean, I don't know how old mine is, but it's not new.
The old Linksys routers used to last a long time, but I'm not sure that that's true anymore.
My WRT54G lasted for ages until the Magic Bug came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've just checked here. So if you go into Airport Utility, you go to Base Station, add WPS printer, and then you will temporarily turn on WPS. It has an interesting option here, which is first attempt. So in other words, the first machine to ask access to the network will be granted, and then we'll close the network down again. Which means you can connect stuff without a password at all, which is kind of cute.
Huh. Look at that. Okay.
So there we go. So Apple routers still rock.
Yeah, we could call it security light is get an Apple router.
We could, but that's a very expensive security light.
Yeah, that's true. Technically,
now,
but...
Yeah. So the notable breaches, right? There are only so many hours in the day and there's only so much room in my head, so I can't do a deep dive on all of these because it would appear to me that everyone is being compromised. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to think that maybe it's because it's the silly season and sysadmins go on holidays and attackers know that, and that's why it's just gone mad of late.
Hmm.
But whether it's coincidence or not, this since we last spoke, the notable breaches that have come to my attention are a company called Community Health Systems, which look after medical records in the southwest of the United States mostly, lost 4.5 million patient records.
Jeez.
Whoops. The U.S. Postal Service says that 51 of their stores were infected with credit card stealing malware.
Are you kidding me?
Oh,
I
wish
that one. I go to the post office still.
Yeah, well, apparently they have a subsidiary called USPS Store.
Okay.
And that's where the problem was.
Wow.
And then finally, those nice people in Mozilla have lost almost 100,000 email addresses and passwords because their bug tracker was buggy.
Oh, jeez. That's terrible.
Okay, so that's all the breaches for this month. So now I just want to jump into suggested reading. I'm going to leave most of these to the user's discretion, but just a few I just want to highlight. The first one, maybe you can envision me getting up on my soapbox a little bit for this one, but one of the reasons I think it's important to have privacy is because a surveillance culture stifles expression. People don't feel comfortable talking about things if they know they're always being watched. Not because those things are illegal, but just because they don't feel comfortable talking about them. And Pew Research did a survey which kind of put some numbers on that abstract thought and basically showed that the topic of Edward Snowden is something that people are more comfortable talking about face-to-face than they are online.
Hmm.
And that's because we know we're being watched online. And it's kind of interesting that it's sort of a self-referential thing.
Yeah.
Because they polled about Snowden. And Snowden has told us why we should be afraid. So it's kind of interesting. You know, I think, you know, people say, oh, well, if you've nothing to hide, you shouldn't be afraid of permanent surveillance. I say rubbish to that. It has a real effect on society. It stifles innovation. It stifles free expression. It is a bad thing. Ask people who used to live in the former Soviet Union or in East Germany.
Yeah.
So anyway, just, you know, some numbers is always good.
You know, the day I really got that, you know, I didn't live through any of that. And so I've always been sort of the, you know, oh, it doesn't matter as long as you have nothing to hide, blah, blah, blah. And then watching it suddenly become illegal to say you're gay in Russia.
Right.
Holy cow. I mean,
yes.
That's not a, you know, crazy third world country or anything. I mean, that's a
I think it's becoming one, but you're right, it's not.
Right, but to see that in my lifetime switch over to that, saying, well, okay, where's your free expression now?
You know,
it's like, holy cow. So, yeah, I believe now. I'm a little slow.
It's a pity it had to come to that. Something else I thought was worth mentioning is there's a new site that has started up with the purpose of what they call HTTP shaming. So they are calling out websites and apps that don't encrypt stuff they should encrypt. In other words, use HTTP when they should be using HTTPS.
Hmm.
A lot of big names in there. Mashable, OkCupid, our friends at Apple, who are sending firmware down without HTTPS, as well as so are NVIDIA. Now, bear in mind that firmware is something which you are... Firmware and drivers are stuff that runs with full privileges on your system. So if you send them over HTTP, an attacker could inject malware into them as they come down. You really don't want that when you're getting drivers. So every driver should come over HTTPS.
Interesting. A subtlety I certainly wouldn't have thought of, but one would hope our friends at Apple might.
Hopefully. And also GPG for Win, which is a encryption software, comes over an unencrypted channel.
Okay, so skip those guys. That one, right. I would have known that.
Yeah, so, you know, hopefully this website shines a spotlight, people go, oops, fix their stuff, and then all is better. That's the theory anyway.
Yeah.
And then I just want to recommend two articles from Naked Security. And it seems that every time I recommend stuff from Naked Security, there just seems to be going from strength to strength. They did one article called The 5 Most Common Excuses for Doing Nothing About Computer Security. And basically they lay out what the excuse is and why it's absolute codswallop.
Oh,
and this is a perfect one for telling your relatives when they say, well, I don't need to do anything because I'm running a Mac. I don't need anything because I only go to reputable websites. Etc.
Oh, I got to read that. That sounds really good.
And then the other one is titled, We Need to Talk About Email. And it's quite a thought-provoking article about how, as a society, we have basically blotted out the fact that email is this terrible security nightmare and that we seem to just carry on with our lives, ignoring that fact, much to our detriment. And it sort of explains exactly how broken email is. You know, the analogy I always use is email is a postcard. If you wouldn't write it on a postcard, don't send it in an email.
Hmm.
But that's not how most people behave. And if you want to know why, I think the article explains it well.
Okay.
And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff here, but I don't think we should waste our time. I think that's enough vegetables.
Okay, you want to get onto the fun stuff, right?
I do.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, so we're going to start with a little follow-up from the last time I was on, which is 2 weeks ago, talking about running, or, well, we talked about xkpasswd and doing it from the command line, and then we switched over to Automator so that Mac people could run xkpasswd without ever needing to go near a terminal.
That was fun. Nice. I love that.
It was fun, and it also sparked some listener feedback. So I got a comment on contact me thingy on my blog from a listener called David Quattlebaum, which has to be one of the coolest names I've ever seen. And he actually wrote a little sort of command line scripty thing, which he has up on his GitHub page, which is linked in the show notes, called pop-up, and it's a terminal command to put up a pop-up in OS X. So you could use that from within a run shell script in Automator to make Automator pop something up. So if you don't want to use growl, but you do want your Automator command to pop something up, that's an option.
Oh, so this was back when I was saying, how do I know that xkpasswd, when it's in my web browser, has actually done anything?
Right. So the way the xkpasswd action we wrote worked is it creates the password, and then it stuffs it into the clipboard, which is a good place to have it, and then you just go command V and paste it wherever you want. But it takes a second, especially the first time you run it after a while, because OS X doesn't always keep it in RAM. And so it may take like 5 or 6 seconds the very first time you run it in a day, while, you know, it starts up Automator in the background, loads up the thingy, does it, and then spits out the password. And then once you've done it once, it probably takes a millisecond. So it would be nice to just know, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so my answer was, well, I recommend you install growl and stick in a growl notification to the bottom of
and
the...
And I think I said... I don't want to.
Approximately, yeah. Yeah, so you said, well, I don't want this third-party stuff, which is fair enough. I just love growl because you can tell growl, dear growl, please use OS X standard notifications, and then it just acts as a bridge into OS X's notification center, which normally needs digitally signed apps, blah, 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 blah.
Hmm.
So anyway, that was my... But you said no, and that's fair enough. So this is one option. So you could use this pop-up command, stick it inside a run shell script at the end of your thingy and make it pop up a message saying done or ta-da or, you know, whatever you like. And then another way is, I think you mentioned, well, why couldn't it just play a sound? And Automator, you'd think, should be able to do that. It can launch iTunes and play a playlist, but that's not really what you want. You don't really want something as simple as, I'd like a password launching the world's biggest piece of bloatware on the planet. Right?
Right.
So I went to Googling. And as with so many things, the answer is on the command line. There is an OS X command line utility called, AF Play, which I think stands for audio file play. It's certainly how I'm going to remember it. And AF Play will play an audio file without bringing up any sort of UI whatsoever. It'll just play it.
Oh.
So therefore, we can use that as the basis of an Automator action, and we can make our Automator go ding or bong or whatever we like when we're done. So I wrote up how to do that in a blog post and used it as an excuse to also teach people about variables in Automator for a reason I will explain.
Okay.
So Automator works by passing... So every action has an input and an output, and they all filter through, and then when the action is finished, when the workflow is finished, it's going to spit out something as the output. Now, in the case of our XKPassWD example, we don't care about the output because we don't take it from Automator. We shove it into the clipboard and we take it from the clipboard for later use.
Right.
But some actions do produce an output. They might write a file to somewhere. They might FTP something to a server. And so we have to be careful that by playing a sound, we don't result in the output of our Automator action being the sound file instead of what we actually made, because then adding in the bung at the end has become really counterproductive.
Okay.
So, you know, let's say we created a file, we have a link to it, or the action is supposed to end by emailing it, but we've put in a bung before that, and now it's broken. So the way around that is variables. So what
why is it broken? I didn't follow you.
Okay, well, if you're expecting to do something with the output of the Automator action, and if you load an audio file and play the audio file as part of the Automator action, the output is now that audio file.
Oh, as opposed to the clipboard having the data?
Well, the clipboard can have the data, fine. That's why it works for XKPassWD. But what if we don't want to use a clipboard? What if we're writing an Automator action to replace some text? Then the output should be the new text.
Oh, not just the bong.
Not the bong, right.
Okay.
Because actually what would happen in that case, it would actually be the file path to the bong would be what the output would be, which is really not helpful.
Not at all.
Right, so what we actually need to do is we need to take the output, put it somewhere safe, play our bong, and then go fetch. And then return what was the output, unchanged.
Okay.
And the answer to that is a variable. So we take the output, we stick it in a variable, we do our bongs, and then we go back to the variable and pull the output back from it.
So the variable is just a place to store that output while we go do something else?
Exactly. And in fact, that's how you would use variables in all sorts of Automator actions. So maybe you have an Automator action that needs to gather a file from an FTP server, so it might take 5 or 6 steps to connect to the FTP server, find the file, download the file, put it somewhere on your desktop, say, and then you want to save a reference to it. And then you want to go find another file from another server and get it too, and then later on you want to use the first file again. If you didn't put in a variable, it's lost, because there's only one thing rippling through. But with a variable, you can save something for later.
All right, it's very useful. Sounds fun.
You can have as many variables as you like.
We're actually back after a short interruption and bizarre canceling of Skype call. So we're trying to remember where we left off. Bart, the last thing I definitely heard was you saying that the variable's purpose is a place to hold the output while you go off and do something else. You said something about going to get a file off a server or something like that.
Yeah, so in Automator, right, every action takes one input, gives one output. So if you only have one thing to work on for your whole workflow, that's fine, because it just ripples down through it. But if you ever need to work on two things, you go get one, put it aside, get the other, put it aside.
Okay.
So that's why variables are very important. So in this case, we want to put aside what we were doing, go get a noise, play the noise, and then pick up where we left off.
Okay.
So I'm hoping you still have your Automator action from last week ready, but it doesn't really matter. You can start a fresh one. That'll only go bing. It just won't be all that interesting.
Let's see. File, open recent. Ooh, XKPassWD. Look at that.
Perfect.
Yes.
So it doesn't really matter what you've done before, right? Because the point of this is just make it go bing. So whatever it was, we're going to just add stuff to the bottom of our existing workflow.
Okay.
And so in the case of XKPassWD, the first and last steps don't really matter because we don't care about the output. But let's imagine we've written a workflow that the output does matter. And so we're going to do it the right way so that we can do it in a way that we can always do and we never have to change it.
Okay.
So the first thing is we're going to be working with variables. So we need to make sure that variables are visible to us. So if you go to the View menu.
In Automator.
And then in Automator, you'll see that the bottom element says variables. If it doesn't have a check mark next to it, click on it until it does.
Ah, it doesn't have a check mark. Now they are.
So now down the bottom, there is an empty list of variables. So let's make a new one. Just right-click in that.
Okay. So my whole workflow seemed to disappear.
Ah, okay. That's a bug, right? You see the way at the very, very top now, there's a little tiny ball where if you hover over it, you get the little draggy arrow.
Oh, look at that. There it is.
Yeah. Pull it back down and there's your workflow. That is a bug.
It sure is. I was like, oh, it's all gone.
It happened on my Mac upstairs. It didn't happen on this Mac. I'm glad it happened to you, because then we can talk about it.
Okay, good.
So when you have your workflow back, right-click anywhere in that variables area and then go new variable, dot, dot, dot.
New variable, dot, dot, dot. Okay.
So give it a name. I'm going to call it original output.
All right.
And then give it a value of nothing.
Nothing Think. Or not, not, blank.
Emptiness. Just empty. Delete it. Yeah.
Okay. And say done.
Now we want to get, we're going to drop in an action that says take whatever is in the workflow now and pop it into that variable. And so if you just stick variable into the search there for actions, okay, you'll see there's only two.
I have variables as an option next to actions.
No, leave it on actions because we want, okay, an action to actually work with our variable.
Do you have to be able to spell variable correctly to find him?
Yeah, it helps.
Okay. All right, so am I going to get a value variable or set a value variable?
We want to set first. So in other words, whatever is currently trickling down through, we want to pop that into the variable. So you drag and drop in a set value of variable to the bottom of the workflow.
Okay.
And then in the dropdown, if it isn't already selected by default, which it probably will be because there's a grand total of one variable in existence.
Okay.
Just make sure original output is selected.
Okay, so the last thing that we did in XKPassWD was copy to clipboard, and it's now setting the value of the variable called original output. It's setting it to what was in the clipboard?
Correct. Ah. So basically, yeah, so it's actually so copy to clipboard gives back what it got in. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change what's flowing down through. So what's actually going in there is the password.
Right, okay.
Which is good, because that's, yeah, so we might want to do something with. Then we're going to actually do our playing of sound. And so the first step towards playing a sound is getting a reference to a sound file. And the automator action to get a specific file, so don't pop up a window asking the user for a file, just always get this specific file, is get specific
specified finder
item. Specified, sorry.
That's a real common one.
It is a real common one. And I wish there was an easier way to search for it, because searching for finder is not helpful.
Well, now why am I not... get specified. I have aperture calendar. There it is. Okay. All right. So I drag that one down.
The new bottom.
So we're telling it now we've got this variable set aside. Now we're going to go get that sound file.
Yeah. So drop it in and then click on the add button. And if you want to use one of the standard system sounds, just hit command open until you're at Macintosh HD.
Or whatever you've named your.
Or I was going to say mine's called Macintosh SSD. I've just noticed. Anyway,
mine's called Piggy.
Piggy. Okay.
Okay.
Go into system.
Uh huh.
Then library,
uh-huh.
Then sounds.
Okie dokie.
There's a lot to scroll through here. Sounds.
Yeah.
And the one I like is glass.
Glass is my favorite also. Okay.
And then just click add.
Mm-hmm.
And so glass is now sitting there waiting for us to do something with.
Cool.
And in fact, the way I've written the next step, you could actually play like loads of sounds one after the other if you want.
Maybe I want to play the NoSilicast theme song. Could have gotten that.
Exactly. Huh? Yeah, just plop in an audio file. Doesn't really matter.
Okay.
So the next thing we want to do
real quick, I noticed that the system sounds are AIFFs. Does that matter? Can it be an MP3, anything we want?
I have so far not been able to make it not play an audio file.
Okay.
Everything I've tried to run through AF play seemed fine.
Okay.
So the next thing we want to do is actually play the sound by shelling out to AF play. So we need run shell script. Shelling out basically means doing it on the command line.
Okay.
So we want to run shell script.
So we're going to go get another action called run shell script like we did the first time.
Yes. And we're going to plop it into the bottom of our workflow.
Okay.
This time we're going to leave the shell dropdown to /bin/bash,
okay,
which is the default. But we want to go to the other dropdown on the right side of that little thing called pass input, and we want to change it to as arguments.
Why? What's that mean?
Because that means we're going to get each file in the list above one at a time inside a for each loop.
Wait, what?
Okay, thankfully Automator writes the code for you. Change it and you'll see what I mean.
Change it. Okay, so it wrote a bunch of glop in there for f in blah, 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 do echo f, done.
What it's doing is it's going to loop through everything it was given and then do whatever's between the do and the done.
Okay.
It defaults to echo, in other words, print out what I got in, which is utterly uninteresting. So just take the word echo and replace the word echo with the word AF play.
So you're saying AF play is built into OS X?
Yes, it is an OS X terminal command. It seems to be just an OS X command. I've never come across it anywhere else.
Okay. And it means play that audio file?
Audio file play, yeah. And that's it, you're done. You just have to change the word
What's
echo.
What's all this other glop in here mean? For F in, what does it say, quote, dollar, ampersand, quote.
In other words, for everything that was passed in, for every file that was passed into us, AF play the file.
Okay.
Is how you'd read that in English.
All right. I'm going to take your word for it, but this could be, you know, sending my OS to China for all I know.
No, we're just AF playing everything in the list above.
Okay.
And then the last thing we want to do to be good citizens is put back the output we saved away. And so to do that, we need the other variable. So get value of variable. Drop a get value into the very, very bottom. Make sure it's set to original output. And then we're done. And our action will do everything it did before and go bing.
So you said get the other variable. You mean the only variable we have. We've only created one, right?
Yes. In other words, so get back what we put away safely.
Okay, so from the top now.
To prove that this is doing what I say, if you click on expand every one of the results tabs in each of those actions, then we can watch what's rippling through.
Okay.
So if you see results, 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 all the way through.
I hate scrolling an Automator. It's so hard.
Yeah, I know. I also hate
to get in this teeny little area to get it to scroll.
Yeah. So if you click
start
play
at the bottom.
Right, and then you scroll way up to the top, you'll see that after the output of the run shell script action is your password, which is going to be different every time. Mm-hmm. The output of copy the clipboard is the password again.
Mm-hmm.
Then the output of set variable is the password again, because set variable puts it into the variable and keeps it rippling through.
Okay.
But then things change, because the output of get specified finder item is the finder item.
Right, which is our audio
sound. Last.aiff.
Okay.
The output of run shell script is plain old nothing.
Because it's doing is playing something, so it has no output.
Correct. And then the output of get original output is the password again.
Okay, so if I say run,
mm-hmm.
I should see, will I hear a ding probably?
You will hear you'll hear the ding we put in, and you'll also hear Automator playing its little noise because you're running straight enough.
Wait,
Automator.
I know how to make. I was on Daily Tech News Show with Tom Merritt, and my textual sounds kept coming through my monitor speakers, which would then feed back into the microphone. So I sounded like a complete noob, and I could not for the life of me figure it out. And somebody had told me this before, and I just forgot. There's input setting, output setting, and then there's sound effects, which can come from a third place. So I'm going to purposely set that to LED cinema display. And when I run this action, you guys should hear it feedback through my speakers.
Well, let's give that a go.
All right, here we go. Run. Could you hear it?
I only heard I didn't hear the glass go ding.
Interesting. I heard the glass
did go you?
Ding. Yeah, but then, and then I heard the whoo.
The Automator hoot. Yeah, the only thing that came out, obviously the only sound effect is the Automator hoot.
Okay, great. I can't even get it to do it wrong when I want it to. All right, I'm sending it back so that it's not going to play later, so that one drives me nuts. But okay, so I see now, feeding through, we run the shell script that creates this crazy mm-hmm. password, 64 right here, heat, March 91. Copy to clipboard has
arrive
the same
enjoy
thing.
Straight. There you go.
Copy to clipboard has it again. Set value of variable has it again. Then get finder specified item just shows the AIFF I chose. Mm-hmm. And then no output, like you said, from AF play. And then get variable mm-hmm. of output again has the password. So now if I were to type somewhere and hit paste, yes, indeed you do. It's there.
There you go.
How cool.
So you've now learned how to put stuff in and out of variables and to make Automator go ding.
I think it's fun. I know that was small.
It is fun. It's a silly topic, right? But I still think it's fun.
But it's actually useful. It is actually what I asked for. And it gives us a reason to play around with Automator, which is always good. And we learned what to do with variables.
Exactly. So I think all in all, it's a good... I don't know. I was going to say 15 minutes, but with all of the time jumping, I had no idea how long that was.
Yes, we have a little bit. I just hope one of our recordings worked out well. This is really cool, Bart. I think this is fun and maybe a little more playful terminal work and technically not terminal, but a shell script.
Well, no,
that sounds
right. We learned the terminal command AF play, right? You can use that in the terminal as well.
Can I do that as a little experiment here? Let's see. I'm going to do it the easy way.
If you open up a terminal window and a finder window, if you go to that place with all those nice audio files and then just type AF play into the terminal and drag and drop, you should be able to make it go bing or bong or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to go to my top level, to library, to... can I do other stuff? Like, I just saw videos. Let's see.
Well, I've no idea how AF Play will deal with a video.
Was it under library and then sound?
Library no. Sounds, yeah.
No. I'm at essentially Macintosh hard disk library and there's no sounds. What did I miss? I'm being an idiot here on live audio. Well, live. Yeah.
System. You go into system?
System. I went to library. I got to go to system then library.
System library, yes.
Because there are three libraries to play with, right?
Correct. There's library, system library, and your own library.
Okay, so I could do a CD and then drag my, what is that little symbol called at the top of the window?
The proxy, we don't have to do a CD. If you just type AF Play and then drag and drop in the file.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, so pick the file, not the proxy icon, and drop it onto the terminal. That'll work.
All right, now I'm going to go back and see if I can turn my sound back on. Where did it go? Ah. It's not going to work, but I'm going to put it. Let me do, I'll leave Cinema's Play. Can you hear that?
No. Nope. I can't, but if you can, then you know if it's working or not.
Okay. And couldn't hear it. That came through my headphones for sure. Actually, let's do this. Let me change this just for the second, just so people can hear it, because nobody's going to believe me. Let's see if I do it again. That time
I heard that.
All right. So that was me just saying AF Play and dragging that file in.
Yeah.
I'm going to AF Play all kinds of stuff.
It's fun, and so now you have another thing you can do to freak people out, because if you SSH into Steve's machine and AF Play stuff, it'll go bing and bong, etc., etc.
Oh, especially I should just find out whatever his alert noise is and just play it all the time.
Actually, what's the one that's for whenever you do a typo, the sort of the dunk one?
I think he keeps
Basso.
Basso. Oh, yeah, that really just makes you feel like, what'd I do? Well, this is really cool, Bart. I liked it.
Excellent. Sorry, I'm just playing around with all these now. Ooh, funk. No, funk. Funk is the one that's I've done something illegal.
The really irritating one?
Yeah, you know, when you're trying to type and it won't let you, it's dum 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 dum. That's funk.
Oh, I hate that one. I'm going to play
it. It's not very funky. I don't know why it's called that. What's Hero? That sounds good. Oh, that's really disappointing.
It's not as good as it sounded?
No, it just got doot.
Oh, that's the one that sounds like a little train whistle to me.
Hero. I think that's the one Automator does, is it?
Yeah, that is the one we were listening to. Okay, so one thing before we close down. So now, if I save this again as a service, is this now available to me inside Safari?
Yes. So you're editing the live service because you went to Open Recent. So as soon as you hit Command S, that's it, you're done.
Okay. Ooh, I got something. And
excellent.
It was a different password. There we go. I do like that, Bart. I might need to give it a different sound since I have all kinds of stuff set to that. But that's very cool. One other question before we go. Oh, yeah, services are available in Chrome as well. I was thinking
services are
only...
pretty much everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
We did find it's not in Calculator, but that is very much the exception, not
that's
the rule.
Right. You said any app you want, Allison, and I grabbed the calculator and it didn't work. Fine.
I'm sure a psychologist could have a lot of fun with. So you could pick any app and you went for the calculator?
What?
I think it proves you're definitely an engineer.
I think it is. And it's in my DNA. All right, Bart. Well, I really appreciate this. This was a lot of fun, and it wasn't much vegetable eating at all. This is very cool.
Yeah, excellent. So it was mostly dessert then?
I think it was. I think it was all dessert. All right.
Well, I think now I can promise you the next time's a bit more meaty. Big steak.
All right. We'll do it.
Okay. Until then, happy computing.
Well, I thought that was a blast. And Bart and I just actually sat down. We broke off that recording and we started up another recording. So we've already recording Taming the Terminal, which I think will be on next week, depending on how things work out. But anyway, we had a lot of fun doing two recordings in spite of our Skype dropout problems. Well, that is going to wind us up for the week. Many thanks to the makers of Clarify over at BlueMangleLearning.com. Please go over and buy a copy of Clarify. Kevin has bought 7 of them, I think, so far, just to show solidarity with the show. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions. When's the last time we had a good dumb question? Ooh, actually, you know what? Somebody sent a dumb question in, and I haven't responded to them yet. It came in while I was on the trip, and I haven't answered them yet, so I do need to get back to them. Anyway, do send those questions, comments, and suggestions to Allison at podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter and app.net over at Podfeet, and do check out the NoSilicast Google Plus community. I'm posting links to the blog posts when they come out during the week, so I think 3 blog posts came out today early on. If you ever want to get a jump on things and read things ahead of time, it's a lot of fun, and still getting a lot of good tech support calls going back and forth, people helping each other out. To get to the NoSilicast Google Plus community, it's super easy. Podfeet.com/Google Plus. Everything's podfeet.com/whatever you think it might be. So go check that out. If you want to join in the fun of the live show, we had so much fun tonight. We got the band back together. We got so many of the old players, the new players. We got new people. It's been an absolute good time. I want to say hi, a big shout out to Nuris, who came for the first time. I think Dan tricked her into coming, but we had Will was back. I haven't seen Will in forever, and Timothy was back after a long time, and Jim Sewell. We just and the regular primetime players were all in there. So anyway, if you want to join in that fun of that live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic NoSilicastaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.